So we're in for a lot of special effects and a lot of space battles this week.
Shut up. There are no special effects and no special. In fact, there's not even a space problem in this episode.
No.
This is like the least Star Trek-y Star Trek episode. This is DS9, the sitcom.
Yeah, and we've had that before because this is kind of positioning itself as a sequel to House of Quark, which was the...
It's absolutely first, a sequel. It's yeah, the same characters, it's the same romance.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, one of the things that Star Trek can occasionally do and what Deep Space Nine can kind of, you know, frequently do is just hang with the characters because it's not a space problem show. It's not a Star Trek show in that sense. It's a, you know, show set in the Star Trek universe. And one of the things that I always want when I'm watching Star Trek is to know what it's like to just live in this world rather than to, you know, boldly go somewhere in a spaceship.
I mean, that's like a bold stab at saying that I think DS9 is at its best when it isn't doing what Star Trek normally does, which is I don't think it's ever really. We watched Dramatis Personae recently, which is doing a TNG episode, and it was boring as hell.
Yeah.
You know, this is really fun, the episode this is. It's,
Yeah, I think, like, what's the thing? The show just isn't set up to do space problems because it's not a crew. And while people are defined by their jobs are things like, you know, bartender and stuff. So,
yeah.
So it isn't really set up for that. And what it ends up reaching for instead is kind of galactic politics and just kind of weird hang time on the station with the characters.
It's basically the last four seasons, it settles on either galactic politics or kind of like intense character dramas.
Yeah.
And it can do both of those really well. When it's at its best is when it marries the two.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I mean, the way it does that, I think, is by having each kind of galactic power represented by a single recurring guest star. You think about Dukat, for instance, you know, he generally represents whatever the Cardassians are doing, but he has a relationship of some kind with Kira. And so that works on a character level as well as a sort of political level. So they get to do that. Here, though, there's not really much galactic politics. It is a sort of funny thing because it is a kind of episode that doesn't rely on the premise to be kind of possible, except that everyone's kind of wearing latex and talking about made up history things and like all of that. And that's kind of fun because they're particular Star Trek things. So we still enjoy it as Star Trek, but it's doing something a bit different from what we're used to.
You know what I call this episode? I always used to call this episode the one where everyone's really horny. Dax is horny for Worf. O'Brien and Kira are horny for each other. Worf is horny for Grilka. Worf is horny. I mean, honestly, God. I mean, I've never related to a Star Trek episode more. Understandably, this isn't what some people are looking for in Star Trek. And I get that. And I've heard this episode criticized as, you know, being the antithesis of what the franchise should be doing. They're wrong, but
I think they're wrong. I mean, I like this a lot because the characters on Deep Space Nine were always a bit better drawn and a bit more interesting than their predecessors on Next Generation. And so you can just give them fun things to do. And during the week we posted, you know, like our top five TNG episodes. And while Disaster didn't make it to my top five, it's very near there. And that is just because there's the most rudimentary space problem that you can get away with on TNG. And the rest of the time is just us hanging with the characters. And that's fun.
Two of my five were Family and Lower Decks. And there's no space anomaly to be seen in those. That's just focusing on really well-drawn characters.
Yeah.
I'll tell you something else that I was very aware of when I was watching this, and that is just how well Ron Moore, what a witty writer he is and how well he writes comedy. He also writes Our Man Bashir. He also writes Bada Bing, Bada Bang. He also writes Take Me Out to the Holosuite. You know, he's a really funny writer. it actually makes me think of Battlestar Galactica, you know, and just how dour and bleak that is. Yeah,
miserable that is.
Yeah. I'm doing it right. It's a phenomenal television.
Superb.
Man, oh man, it could have been lightened up a bit because this guy can write, you know, he can write comedy.
Yeah.
But this is that kind of like, you know, because he also wrote one of your favorites as well. He wrote In the Cards.
Yeah, oh, okay. Yeah. That's wonderful. Gosh, I love that.
And that's at the end of this season. This is right at the beginning of the season. That's right.
Yeah.
And they're both kind of light, aren't they? And
yeah.
Before the season gets serious, basically, you know?
Did we record an In the Cards
we did.
Commentary back in the day? So we I have did. It sitting on my hard drive somewhere.
We were doing a completely different podcast. But yeah,
that's right.
We should release
another
bonus.
Untitled Star Trek project. Yeah. Well, I mean, I love In the Cards a lot, and it's precisely because it's hang time before we get a lot of action. And it's terribly enjoyable. And this is episode 3. So presumably the first couple of episodes kind of tie up whatever was happening in series 4, the Klingon War. Things are starting to return to normal. And series 5 is a kind of weird interlude between the Klingon War in 4 and then the full outbreak of war with the Dominion in 6. So there's time for some high concept episodes and time for a bit of hang time as well. And I think I really like that. Friend of the podcast, James, said that he thought that series 5 spins its wheels a bit because we're in between two big events. And it looks like the Klingon War wasn't where they expected to go initially. So things are a little bit sort of strange.
It was foisted upon them by the studio saying we want to beef things up with the Klingon. So they were originally going to do the Dominion War, and that was going to start at the end of 3, the beginning of 4, and they had to put it aside for like a season and a half. Not to contradict that, James, but season 5 of DS9 is my favorite Star Trek season. I think the hit rate of episodes this year is phenomenally good. And to go back to something I said to you before as well, the diversity of what this show brought out. Before this episode is The Ship, which is a very dark piece. After this episode is Nor the Battle to the Strong, which is as bleak as DS9 gets. And then after that, it's like Trials and Tribulations. Like, this show was just knocking them out at this point.
Yeah.
But you never quite knew what you were going to get from one week to the next. I really like that.
Yeah. And that's, I think, you know, that's absolutely not what you expect from Star Trek The Next Generation or Star Trek or even Strange New Worlds. You know, you expect a space problem for competent people to solve. I think by instead having this sort of mad variety of characters and just any number of things that you could do, a different thing each week is a pretty good thing for Deep Space Nine to aim for.
Well, it's just unpredictable as well, isn't it? That makes it really, I was never quite sure what genre they were going to tip their hat to from one week to the next, and that was really exciting.
Yeah.
Well, I'm ready to go and watch this thing. You know what? I think we're going to enjoy this a lot.
Yeah, I think we are too. I had real fun with it when I was watching it last night. Let's get ready. All right, I'll count us in. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, and we're off.
Oh, man, who hasn't done this? Stood outside listening to people having an argument. Oh, this is so me.
So Julian is funny in this episode, but there's one or two scenes where I think he absolutely doesn't come off. And there's one scene in particular which I dislike
you
enormously.
Better not
that he's
talking
in.
About that infirmary scene because I love it.
Yeah, it's terrible.
I love it.
But this is adorable, and it's very English as well. You know, like he's being caught listening at a door, and he does this sort of elaborate, "Oh, my neck," or whatever, you know, and looks embarrassed. And this, because you know, Ferengi have comedy latex ears and obviously canonically they can hear things, but
he should
he's
have like
just
twiddled them a little bit like an antenna, should be like, you know, just to tune in.
Oh, it's that's so great. Funny
in a minute when Keiko goes in, he's like, oh, let's stop, show's over, come on, let's go.
Well, the fun thing is, I was actually, here's Keiko, and I'm kind of going, wait, so what's happening here? Because I had forgotten that we were obviously at the stage of this sort of weird high concept pregnancy in series five.
At least they let her be pregnant, all right. They didn't shove her behind a console or in a medical jacket. They let the woman be pregnant. Yeah. And she, like, none of this says Balana. That. She says, like, thank you so much for allowing me to actually, you know, take part in. There's one episode where she beats the shit out of somebody with her baby sticking out. It's amazing.
I think it's really good. And the reason that I think it's good is, and the reason obviously they went for it, is that it gives Kira new things to do. Mm. And she's used to being physical. She's used to kind of being in charge. And now she has these, you know, O'Brien fussing over her and stuff like that and trying to restrict her.
Did you see Keiko was wearing it as well, that sort of fabulous tunic?
Weird.
Oh, I loved it. Yeah. And you know what? I this is an episode where they're using Keiko for comedy, and they don't do it very often with DS9, and I'm very grateful when they do, because Rosin Chow's very funny.
She really is. She's fantastic.
Remember her giving birth to that baby?
Disaster. Yeah.
Push, Keiko.
She's one of the highlights of Disaster.
I'm trying.
Yes, I'm pushing.
Can I just point out something to
you? Cut.
Can I just point out the lighting? Okay, I know I said I was going to talk about this, but this is so nicely lit compared to Dramatis Personae. I feel like we're four seasons later and they're starting to make it look like home, you know?
Yeah. I mean, it's all that thing about the set is that there's just lots of interesting backgrounds that you don't quite know what they are, and lots of practical lighting, no fucking reflective surfaces, obviously, but it is interesting to look at, I think.
This was so nice because I'll tell you what, there's one thing they kind of got wrong in the otherwise spectacularly wonderful season four of DS9. It's like Worf was such a grump.
So yeah, it's quite nice to see grump
him.
Here.
Well, it's nice to see his eyes lit up. You know, he's a horny beggar.
Yeah.
He's seen a nice, beautiful Klingon. Now, do you know what? The way Dax hangs around him in this entire episode, basically trying to get him to know his is great. Yeah. I think that she's terrific in this.
I think, you know, like, I think it works pretty well. She's a little bit too passive, but I do like that she takes control. And later on, she's described as the aggressor in their relationship.
Because she started. How people are coming on to you, Nathan. All right.
This hug made me so happy. I just thought it was so sweet, the two of them meeting one another again. In a way, I was a little bit disappointed that Quark wanted to have sex with her, because I thought that they kind of had a lovely relationship going. You know, she was going to tear his face off last time, but it's been a while, and they kind of get together and appreciate one another as old friends. I like it a lot.
But I do like the fact that they give him a romance. Quark, you know, I rather than just, you know, the latest dodgy deal. And House of Quark didn't go down that route at all, did it? They inadvertently became good friends because of what
that's
they go
right.
through together.
He does touch the inside of her thigh at one point and then get warned off. So much fun.
And interestingly, Armand Shimerman says, so I was reading Memory Alpha, Armand Shimerman says that he had a romance story in season two with I think it was a Cardassian woman.
Okay.
And he plays it very over the top, and like he says, like very hard on his sleeve, and it didn't quite come off. And even when he watched it back, he wasn't all that convinced. And he says, no, for a romance, it's got to be a bit more Quark, a bit more kind of laid back and a bit more savvy, you know. And after he watched this one, he said, yeah, we got it right. We got the Quark romance right.
Yeah, I think it's really good. I think there's that bit where Dax says, actually, just don't be a massive dickhead on this date. You know, don't look at her cleavage. Don't talk about wanting to have sex with her. Like, just chill the hell out. And so he isn't, you know, he often, that's how they play Quark.
I was watching this episode, and I was like, I'm not sure whether Quark gets the best lines or whether just Armand Shimerman delivers them beautifully.
Yeah, it's probably a combination of both.
The bit where he goes to
that
Worf.
Bit with the defiant.
Sorry?
Just watching the opening credits properly for the first time in a while, and the bit where the Defiant goes past the camera is pretty
I missed
nice.
The bit with the two little people spacewalking across towards the pylon. I love that bit. It's the only bit of visual interest to me. So, like...
Yeah.
Okay. So here we go. Romance is about to begin.
Yeah.
Well, I can't recall why she's come here. She come here for him to look over the books.
She's come here to be in this episode. No, it is. It is to look at the. So there's Mary Kay Adams' credit.
Man, Nathan, how much mileage have they driven out of that bloody prune juice joke?
Yeah. So, and there's Phil Morris, who was a sort of semi-regular guest star on Seinfeld. He was like Kramer's lawyer, and he plays this hot Klingon bodyguard with just the best bone structure. When you get a look at him, he's bone really handsome.
Okay, I'm going to say, I told you that me and my mother watched DS9 through, and it's one of my fondest memories of her is the experience we had of watching this show from beginning to end. It was one or two that we watched together. And I vividly recall watching this one with her because she was obsessed with that Klingon bodyguard's ass and kept making me rewind scenes so she could have a good look at it.
Do you know, I have to say that I didn't notice it while watching, but I will be keeping an eye out on it now.
It's very pert. Although, as you did comment earlier, they do have ridiculous space names. Tupok and Tomok.
Termac or something.
Well, it's better than what was it? Carly and Kaz.
Yeah, that's right. So one of them was in House of Quark, as far as I can tell. So the old guy is the guy who was advising her before and who married the two of them, I think. Oh, look, there's Andrew Robinson's director's credit. Oh, here is our handsome Klingon.
Straight away, this has House of Quark vibes, though, doesn't it? It's like, he's in trouble with it. He's going to have to fight this Klingon. You know, we know this is where we're heading.
Yeah.
Eventually.
Yeah, so look at him.
One of three episodes.
Now look at this lift. Look at the lift. The lift comes up into ops with the jerkiest possible way, like some stage lift.
And you know, right?
This is our big special effects shot of the episode is the lift comes into ops because we're just not doing anything else.
How many lights they've got going in that station? That's your special effects budget, all right?
So crappy. Just so low effort.
I love this bit in a minute where she goes, Mr. Worf, this sounds like you've got a terrible case of palm muck. And then Sisko comes out and goes, oh, is it catching? Like, I just like, they've actually got some decent workplace banter. You know,
what about this? I think this is really good because it's the sort of bullshit exposition scene, and there's a little bit of, as you know, Bob, where Dax explains Klingon houses to Worf in this. But if you haven't seen the previous episode, this is enough for us to get the relationship. And here's Avery being relaxed as hell, and
you know what? He's always throwing that ball.
This is only scene.
And this is another thing which is very unlike a lot of other Star Trek. They'll very often put the captain sort of front and center, whereas Avery Brooks.
That was him.
Back. I think that's him. Yeah,
he's looking fine.
Oh God, I know you've got something to say about this scene between Bashir and O'Brien.
No, yeah. So one of the things that I was a bit apprehensive about going into this episode, and I had seen it at the time, but it had been a long time, is that I think that 90s Star Trek does sex very badly. And, you know, the Delaney sisters in Voyager or whatever, sort of banter is really shit. I think that there's something just a bit depressingly adolescent about that scene. Like this scene here.
This scene feels like it's been written for Harry Kim and Tom Paris, doesn't it?
I tell you what, the it's a small station line, which is something that they say all the time because rumors get around. And he just goes, it's a huge station.
You know what? they reveal in one episode, it's always Dax. She's always the one spreading all the gossip about everybody.
Spreading the rumors.
She's in ops, of gossip, and then she spreads it off everywhere else.
But again, the
O'Brien Kira subplot in this has been heavily criticized. Actually, watching it this time, I thought it was quite restrained and it was really well acted as well. It's not really appearing, I believe, but
no,
in the performances, I believed it in the moment, especially that moment where we'll get to it later, but where they realize they've crossed the line. And
line there too,
but we've all been there at one point or another, you know.
So this, I hate this, you know, like they're all adults. Kira's pregnant. He's helping her out of the bathtub and Julian's going, oh, I bet you copped a look at her tits and stuff. And you kind of think, oh, come on, can we grow up? That's really just a bit pathetic.
I'm sorry, Nathan, but I've had this conversation before. Like, probably last week, if I'm honest.
It's all right if it's a guy, though. No, I mean, I just think that just is a little bit depressing. And Julian just comes across like it's pervy. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
She's vulnerable in a medical condition, and it's kind of like, you know, like I bet you looked at her.
There's that scene, and there's the scene with Odo later where they're having to shoehorn in the regulars, aren't they? And they're trying to give them funny things to do. Oh, this is brilliant.
There he goes.
I love the way Worf goes.
He's doing a bit of acting there.
Worf goes, I will apologize.
I will apologize for this later.
And then the look on Vaughn's face when he's being tossed across the room. Oh, right. But you know
what? He orders another drink, but just with hand signals.
I'm not the biggest fan of Worf, I've got to be honest. And I feel as if his best episodes on DS9 are his best episodes. He was given a handful of these episodes on TNG, but I don't think they did that much with him. However, I really liked how pathetic they made him in this episode. Like, a bit, he's a bit castrated, isn't he? But it makes me like him, in fact, you know, because he's always so
This scene. This scene here with Termac, or whatever his name is, from the previous episode. So, Termac space name, is actually pretty good. And it gives us important backstory for Worf, because I'd forgotten whether he was commended or discommended at this point in the show.
I think you'll find there's a continuity error here, though. Because they say you've never pursued a Klingon woman before. But Kayla.
Yeah. But what about... Yeah, Kayla.
Susie Blackson. She's amazing.
Well, he didn't really get the chance to pursue her, did he? He didn't quite.
Alexander?
You know, they just boned. It wasn't really a thing.
She was half human, wasn't she, as well? So.
And they had sex, and then he said, well, now we're married then. And she said, no, thanks. And so it wasn't quite the same.
But do you know what? That attitude of his, or that kind of, it's almost like a Christian attitude, isn't it? Like, right, we've done it now. We've got to come here. We've got to get married. That's why him and Dax work so well together, because she don't play by none of the rules. And so there's tons of conflict there, isn't there?
Yeah, and he actually doesn't really want to do it either. You know, like he agrees with her that that's not where this is going to go, which I think is pretty good. So I think that this is where this Tumek, Jesus Christ, I don't know what that guy's called. This is the scene where the kind of Cyrano de Bergerac thing starts to kick off in this A plot.
Because I'm a bit in the dark about that. I've heard this allusion made.
It's
quite not
Cyrano de Bergerac, is it?
Yeah.
So
he's an incredibly ugly bloke with a long nose who can't get the girl.
Yeah, yeah.
And he teaches somebody how to romance someone.
Yeah, how to woo her. From the sidelines and stuff. And it's a thing that's been done over and over again in sitcoms and stuff.
I know, but it's and Quark. I mean, that's irresistible.
Yeah. And they've already made the point of expressing antipathy. So, Worf says that Quark's opinions don't matter in any way. And so here we get this sort of conversation where – I don't know. Why is he coming to Dax?
He goes, oh, come on. Isn't there a secret handshake or something just to get me to the good stuff?
leap on each other like a pair of crazed voles. is that just because she's had a lot of sex for, in various lifetimes, being hundreds of years old, and so he comes to her?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, and she is the one who is the most kind of chill, kind of the most adult in her approach to sex, isn't she? She's like,
she just enjoys it. Adolescent. Yeah. Do you remember that one when their true initiate Arjun turns up and he turns up at her quarters and then the man walks out draped in a towel. And yeah, it just goes unspoken. Right. And he just looks at him like, and then the scene just goes on. You know? But also as well, like, she doesn't blink an eye when she falls for Lenara Khan in Rejoined. You know, she doesn't blink. And she's on the Rise of Planet with Vanessa Williams. She's clearly getting her rocks off there. Like, she's just a good time girl. And she...
Yeah. But like, just an absolute grown-up attitude to sex, like not a kind of, not the sniggering adolescent thing we got from Julian just now.
But what I love here with Quark is the fact that they give him the depth of characterization for him to want to understand her, because it is more than just sex. He's really interested in her, you know?
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, no, he's doing whatever he needs to do. Yeah, maybe.
Well, maybe. So this, yeah, actually, they do bone, and then we never hear from him again, do we?
Yeah. So. That's it. Yeah. So it really is boning. So, but this is really good, because Worf, in spite of himself, starts to talk about what he would do, kind of what he's planning in his head. And despite what Turnak or Tumok or whatever his fucking name is said before, he turns out to be very good at it, because it works really well. And in fact, Gorilka's response to this advice is far, far better than we have a right to expect. Okay, here's the B plot. And I think that this conversation is just like bafflingly terrible.
Why? I thought, like, this was nice. He's just talking about his family. Like, what I love is the fact that Keiko walks in, right, and she's just completely oblivious to what's occurring.
Yeah.
And she's like, don't stop on my account when they're about to snog, you know?
Yeah. Well, look, I mean, the thing is that for this episode and for there to be drama, there has to be this look at her in that top. She looks fantastic. Holy crap. Doesn't Keiko look spectacular? She's brought her breasts with her to this scene.
The moment I really like, maybe you find it scene, but the second where she says, oh, I could think of worse things than spending 2 weeks alone in Ireland with you. And the way he says, me too. You know, we've had that moment. We've all had that moment where you're like, and you're looking at that person going, oh, what's happening here? Like, and I think in the aftermath of this, Ron Moore actually says he thinks this plot is the one he's most proud of, because this is kind of real. Yeah. This is real. This is what kind of really happens in people's lives. You don't have people with VR sets fighting with bat thefts to win the Klingon woman, you know?
I love that bit. It's great.
Look at Nanar. She's enjoying that massage, isn't she?
I know. So can we talk about the pregnancy bump?
Go on.
So they've allowed her to be pregnant in this sort of space way, which I think is great, and it does let the actor do new things, and all of that's terrifically exciting. That pregnancy bump is now an adult, because this episode was broadcast in 1996.
He's beautiful, and he's
her son with Alexander Siddig.
Do you remember the scene in the first episode of this season where she goes to Bashir, well, this is all your fault, and he goes, my fault? And she said, yeah, you performed the penis. Oh,
they deliberately put that in.
They referenced it. Yeah, that's great.
Because it was his fault. That's great. And he's beautiful because he has two beautiful parents, this young man. So you want to feel old, just...
Do they podcast together?
Yeah, they do. Yeah, Django and her have a podcast where they talk. So just Google him. I'm sure that you've already done that.
Oh, my God. Of course he's listening to Klingon opera in the dark, in the Defiant.
Yeah, that's
tedious. Oh, he's such a misery.
Actually, I quite like that.
Do you know, Quark gets the best line here at the minute, where he goes, you know, it's attitudes like that that stop you people from getting invited to the really good parties.
Yeah, because you're a big racist. I actually kind of like the thought that Worf still remains a bit of an outsider, and so he has his own set to go in and, you know, moon about in, and it's different from everyone else's.
I like the fact
that the Defiant looks pretty good.
Well, I think they kind of had to do that because they didn't really want to dislodge Kira as the first officer. So they're like, okay, well, he's the first officer on the Defiant, the Starfleet part of the station. which kind of makes sense.
Yeah.
I really like the chemistry between Michael Dorn and Armin Schimbert. They're both really good actors and they have great scenes together. What I really like is the fact that they kind of get on fairly well in this, but the tension between the two characters after it just remains right until the end of the series. They don't like each other and Quark is making terrible comments about Worf right up until What You Leave Behind.
It's funny, isn't it? Because obviously Odo and Quark are the natural pairing, and the reason that they are opposites is their attitude to rules. But it's the same with Worf and Quark as well. The reason that they dislike each other is
Worf don't rely on anyone, to rules. He, let's be honest. Remember that,
conversation
he has with Odo when he says, you know, make sure you don't invite anyone around. And Odo's like, of course not. You know, that will only invite subsequent visits, you know.
Yeah.
Miserable pair.
I know, it's a weird scene in this episode. So this is where obviously where Worf agrees to kind of help further because he's been so spectacularly successful.
But it makes sense, doesn't it? Because he wants to prove he can woo a Klingon woman. That's his motive. Yeah. It's not so Quark gets his rocks off.
No.
Did you see that?
So
that
we're in
Beauty and the Beast sweep down there for that.
A massive set with a big ceiling, and we'll never see it again. I mean, this is.
Oh, God, this is so funny when he tries to talk Klingon. He can't get it right. This is what I sound like trying to talk other languages. No.
These scenes are a bit shit. Why? These fight scenes.
No, when
just
he goes,
a bit kind of
this
limp
is ridiculous.
And unexciting.
My shoes are dripping in blood. I'm surrounded by corpses. And you want me to feel romantic? It's just how he delivers these lines. It's great.
Yeah. It is pretty good. I do love his outfit too. Like, did Kales wear that outfit? I hope so. But it
by all
absolutely
accounts,
is the sort
Armin
of thing
Schimmerman
that Quark wears.
All of the moves, so he was doing all of this physical stuff, and he's quoted as saying on Memory Alpha, "I was pretty nifty with a bat left by the end of this episode." I'm saying,
I actually wondered because you know there are a lot of scenes of him shot from behind where it's just the big latex bum head thing happening, and that could basically be anyone. You know, Max could be in there with a bat
he
left.
Does an extraordinary thing. We'll get there later. Where he's being puppeteered and how he acts that, I think it's so real. He's like, he's juddering about all over the place, you know?
Although we'll get there because it kind of kicks in at a particular point in the scene where we need to be reminded of it and he doesn't bother doing it for the beginning of the scene. Is the problem too that Quark is funny and Worf is really boring?
But then the contrast kind of works quite well then, doesn't it? It makes Quark even funnier. I realised as well when I was watching this, they could have played this a different way. But and I'm glad they didn't. They could have had Dax deliberately, you know, like attempting to convince Worf to help Quark because she... But actually, none of it's played that way at all. She's there basically holding up a placard to Worf saying, notice me, please. I'm hot for you.
You know? I don't think we noticed at the time, but there's a time where he is saying what he would say to Grilka and she's just looking at him like totally dreamily as if he's saying it to her, which I thought was kind of cute.
But do you know why they pursued this? Because they didn't write for Michael Dorn and Terry Farrell to be flirting with each other in series 4. But you go watch those scenes. And they are hungry for each other in some of those scenes. And they were like, we've got something here. Let's write this.
Yeah. Well, it's that first episode, isn't it? In Way of the Warrior, he goes to see her in her Klingon calisthenics program or something.
And it, well, yeah, and you don't have to do that to impress me. Like, I'm not trying to impress you.
Yeah. Yeah. That, oh, so what's Renee doing in this scene? It's so weird. It's so weird.
I mean, Miles.
yeah. But he's playing it so strange. Is he jealous? What's going on here?
He's jealous. It's the fucker. He's really jealous.
Then, what part of the family are you? What part of the sister, cousin? You know, like it's really.
I hate to say this, but I work with a load of sarcastic gits like this, you know, honestly.
Yeah, It reminds me of his performance in Take Me Out to the Holosuite. I'm assuming that he just gets more like this as the show goes on, where he just gets to chill and be Renee and be his weird sitcom actor. Yeah, yeah. He can be a bit less of a space person.
Don't you remember him behind that piano in His Way when he's rocking out behind that piano? He's having a great time. Fun.
Yeah.
But you're right. It is particularly bitchy, that scene. And compare that scene to the scene when Kira was coming onto him in Dramatis Personae. I mean, yuck. It's like chalk and cheese, isn't it?
Yeah.
I would have had a great time in the Holosuite.
Oh, there's his bum. Look, I've spotted it. Oh, he's turned around. Man. Yeah. You can tell what religion he is.
Old Meperian ale for two. We can add that to the drink list.
yeah. Get some Tronya, you. Weaklings.
Is she interested in him because he's making a lot of effort, or is she already interested in him?
I think that she likes him and she knows he's kind of a worthwhile person, and she is grateful to him, and he just steps in and helps. You know, there's that affection that's in the first scene when they just hug. I like it.
I really like the fact that there's lots of behind the scenes interviews after House of Court that she had a blast playing the role. She loved working with Armin Schimmer. There's that great story about him saying how agonizing it is in the makeup. Like, if you need to talk to me, come find me. So they wanted to work together again. And I think you can kind of, it extends to the audience, you know?
I think they go to more effort to make her look beautiful as well. Like, the makeup is a bit more feminine, not the forehead makeup, but like, she's generally kind of less odd looking, less sort of grotesque.
I think she played a regular in Babylon 5, you know.
Oh, okay.
You're not sure what that's all about, are you?
No. I'm a bit distracted by Topok or whatever his name is, because he is absolutely selling this scene. And
we go. This is exactly the same scenario that we were heading towards in House of Quark. But the solution is that in House of Quark, it was he had to use his brains, he had to outthink the sort of Klingon tradition or use it to his advantage to get out of that. Whereas here, it's a sci-fi concept gone crazy.
Yeah, I like this sci-fi concept.
Hear from again. This technology. No.
We'll get there, because I actually think that's a really good thing. And what stops this from being something that any show could do that had weird latex face people talking about the distant past and stuff.
Can I point out a goof here?
To being a Star Trek show.
Can I point out a goof? Well, we just had a scene with Odo saying, well, nothing's going on and there's all this thing piling up and O'Brien's not doing anything. And he's just walked into his quarters and said, well, I've got off early. There ain't much happening today.
No, he is goofing off. Yeah. He's absolutely goofing off.
Oh, I love this line in the minute where she delivers it perfectly. Are you two fighting again? So she's talking to a pair of kids.
So she eventually decides to just go and bone Shakar, is that right?
Who, Kira?
Yeah.
I think so. She's still in that relationship now, isn't she?
They
write him out towards the end of the season because the actor's no longer available, so they just summarily write him off. They wanted to pursue the Odo Quark thing as well. Odo Kira relationship.
The Odo Quark relationship. I'd have been there for that.
I do think Keiko's a bit dense here, though. Like, you know, off you go, you two to this nice romantic place in Ireland, you know.
No, but don't you think that she's the one being the grown-up here?
Oh, again, for sure, yeah.
They need to fall in love because it's the title of the episode and that's a thing, or fall in kind of lust, like they want to have sex. But it would also be nice if we were all a bit past that. And, like, I don't think that's a space people thing. I think that's just a normal person in control of themselves thing. If it had just been, you know,
I think there's rather more of this going on in life than you are suggesting.
I'm sure you're right.
Oh no, this is where he says it. Come on, surely there's a Klingon handshake to get me out of this fight.
And now suddenly Worf's all across what happened in House of Quark. So there you go. He's now doling out the plot points.
I was trying to think, you know, who the Quark equivalent is in TNG today, but there really isn't, is there? There isn't.
No.
And I think that's why when this show came along, they were like, what's this? This sort of disreputable character as one of our regulars?
Yeah. I mean, you know, like you've got a cop and a sort of petty criminal and stuff. It's just not the sort of thing that you had because you didn't have crime in the Federation or whatever, and we hardly went outside it. Now, here's what I think is really good. So suddenly we now see him fighting a bit more enthusiastically with Jadzia, and then we see Worf with the thing around his neck, and we're in a holosuite, aren't we?
Yeah.
Is that the holosuite set with a weird thing? And I like how no one really in this audience had VR, you know, the way that we do now, but without us having to explain what the fuck is going on, instead they just demonstrate it by having them act. And so we aren't forced to sit through an exposition scene about what the hell this is, because when we first see it in action, we see Worf and Quark doing the same moves in the same shot. And
the choreography is very nice, and they match those moves beautifully.
Yeah, I mean, I would have died of boredom any scene where it was explained or demonstrated what this technology did, and they absolutely avoid it.
And Ronald D. Moore said, I refuse to explain how this worked. Yeah. And I knew we were never going to see it again. I just wanted it for this episode. It served its purpose. Yeah. Let's move on.
And it worked. I thought that was really good. And the hilarious thing is that, you know, like Worf has these two antennae sort of sticking up beside his head, and it makes it look like a stupid Star Trek bit of technology. But obviously the antenna is there to be cut off by a Bat'leth during the climactic battle.
If I was in your shoes here, I'd be looking for someone a little more entertaining, a little more fun, and a little more attainable. She's saying, Worf, will you fuck me already?
Yeah. A little more spotted, a little more.
Nathan, will you take a look at her? She is beautiful. What is wrong with
him? She's stunning. Absolutely stunning. Yeah.
I mean, he is punching, right?
Yeah. It's crazy, isn't it? What an idiot. Look at her.
Actually, do you know what? I just remembered there's another thing I really, really love, and that is the Jadzia Quark friendship, and that runs from season two, where they're super close, all the way through to with Ezri Dax in the last series. Everybody else on the show rejects Quark, and Jadzia has this massive empathy and has so much. You're seeing her playing late night tango, getting drunk with him, and even when she gets married to Worf, she still does all those things. She's like, well, he's my friend, and you're not telling me who I'm going to hang out with.
That's obviously the reason why he comes to her for advice. So it works in context of this group of characters.
But that's one of the
holy crap, joys, look at that Klingon.
That is one of the joys of this show, is there are so many double acts and interpersonal relationships. And then when you throw in all of the secondary characters as well, Garak, you know, with Bashir, Dukat, with Kira, Wynn, with Sisko, it's very rich when it comes to the characters.
There's his bum again.
Michael Dorn's got quite a nice arse as well, you know.
No, but look at this guy. Like, they've not made Phil Morris put on a stupid beard so you can see his chin, and it's a chin. He's a really handsome guy. I sent you that picture last night.
You know another episode that Phil Morris was in? He was the head Jem Hadar in the second episode of Series 6, Rocks and Shoals. And he gives a phenomenal performance in that. He's the one where he just, you know, they decide to commit suicide because they know
Sisko and
Nat have got the advantage and they've got to go across the battlefield. They always shot. He's fantastic in that. They're very different from this.
Yeah, but he's so good in this, and he really is handsome. And I've seen two bum shots.
There we go. Yeah.
So the little antenna gets chopped off by the Bat'leth. It's so great.
Nathan, I claim the right of proclamation.
I'm making some shit up, which is clearly what's happening.
But that's what Quark would do, right? If anyone was going to think on their feet, it would be Quark.
Also, like, this touches on the theme of the previous episode where Quark decides not to try and beat bad guy the other guy at whose name I've forgotten at his own game, but decides to use you know, Ferengi methods, like shows Gaur on a spreadsheet on his iPhone.
Gaur,
you know, like
face. Do you remember?
So great, so fun. And so this works here. It's a little bit less funny than that, but it's basically the idea. And I love how when the thing gets mended, he goes, "Oh, all right, I'm done with that speech. Let's kind of wail on one another again."
The funny bit here is I think the funniest moment is a bit of physical comedy is when the VR helmet thing goes off and she's so strong that they fall to the floor. He's like, they fall to the floor. And that's when they end up snogging. It's very funny.
And he has to just make up shit to accompany whatever the hell Worf is doing with the thing. It's pretty great.
You know, DS9 is known as the serious Star Trek, you know, but we've watched House of Quark, Take Me Out as a Holosuite, and this. And in the cards.
Yeah, I don't know. Star Trek is serious. It's one of the things that I think, you know, that Strange New Worlds gets right. It does silly things. Yeah. It's been established that stupid things are part of the Star Trek canon and you can help yourself to them and you should. You're not making Battlestar Galactica. It's Star Trek and it's supposed to be fun and silly.
Every other episode of Voyager was bloody ridiculous. You know, they bought into any other.
Yeah, well, look at that man.
I don't know. I think Worf is pretty hot with a bat left as well, you know.
Yeah, but he's no Phil Morris. Down he goes.
So
I guess the only thing that doesn't quite work.
Is that what's supposed to happen?
Yeah, I guess so. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because he was talking about dying before.
Did you see that? That window.
Yeah. Well, it's the same set from before with the high ceiling. But yeah, that's what they spent the special effects budget on this week. You can't tell how Worf can see what Quark is seeing. And I think, I don't know whether you think of that at the time, and there'd be no intrusive way of doing it, but he's looking as if he can see it, and maybe he needs a VR helmet or something.
I think somebody was paying attention, because then you get, at the end of the season, you get those fabulous Vorta view screens. Do you remember? That goes over the head just like that.
Oh, yeah.
You actually get to see through the eye bit, so you can see like the view screen.
What you can see. Yeah, yeah.
I like it when they innovate technology, you know. Or just make something up.
Well, but, you know, like it makes real and physical what's been going on, which he's not quite a puppet, but Worf's been feeding him lines and strategies and stuff like that.
Nathan.
And then eventually we get him in the next room doing the thing. Here we go.
They're going to bone. I don't want to see that. I'm glad they cut away.
Yeah.
Although I do think they cut away at just the right point.
Whoa. she's on top. Woo-hoo.
She is definitely the aggressor, real cat, isn't she? She hit Worf's line. What the hell does she see in that parasite?
Yeah, I know, that parasite. That's rude. Oh, kind of racist.
Don't you please don't criticize this scene. I love it so much.
Yeah, it's. He's such a moron, isn't he? Now she,
I don't know why she bothers, but do you know what?
He's tall. Yeah.
You know. I just love it. The bit I love is where she's floored him, and how she scrabbles on top of him, like desperately. I'm like, she ain't had some for a while. She has not had some for a while, I'm telling you.
No, not since
last week.
Guy in Meridian. What? Okay.
But you know what? It's like he's like, he just goes straight away. Yeah, let's do this. All right.
Yeah. What was he thinking?
Down he goes. She's straight on top.
Oh, that was not Michael Dorn. That wasn't Michael doing that stunt. Michael on the floor
in the in the runabout now, desperately trying to keep their hands off each other. See, I preferred the scene where he was massaging her and just the one line crosses here, where it's kind of like the, you know, restrained, Miles, get out. Or, you know, we're going to fucking run about.
I love that, actually. That's the one thing where he's still kind of talking. Now, Colm Meaney is only a couple of years older than you at this point.
Wow. I mean, look at me. honestly.
Yeah, I know. That's it.
That is a start. Is he really?
There's the same amount of. Yeah.
How old is he there?
He's 43 or something.
Honestly, he's a Guinness drinker if ever I saw one.
Yeah.
You know, well, that's it ages you.
I think that.
Yeah, but this is the point, I suppose, this is the point where they decide to behave as adults, don't they? And say, look, they say, yeah, it would have been nice, but let's not do this. You've got a great marriage. I'm seeing that guy who turns up every now and again from Bajor. Like,
yeah. Is Shekar the space ghost that Beverly Bones?
He is, yeah, it's the same actor.
Yeah.
I can't help but notice, you know, the runabout seems to be about 15 times the size it was in Dramatis Personae.
Yeah, so there's bigger roundabouts. This is the new big roundabout set with the extra control panels in the background for them to stand behind for some reason.
Are you saying roundabout on purpose?
Roundabout, yeah. What is that runabout?
Runabout.
It's going a roundabout.
Do you know what? The funniest story ever was Ira Bear was like, right, we're going to war. DS9's going to war. We need a battleship. He goes, how bloody ridiculous will we be if we're sending those runabouts?
Yeah.
Oh, they're so rubbish, aren't they?
Well, I mean, they were clearly kind of, we need to go to different planets because what else do you do on Star Trek? How are we going to manage that? Yeah. And they have that shitty, tiny runabout set that we saw in Dramatis Personae.
Okay.
Now this.
Why don't see, you like this scene? I love this scene.
No. I like this scene. It's the scene between Miles and
because you remember
him.
I told you in a couple of episodes ago, there's a scene in DS9 where everyone's been shagging and they've hurt each other and they all come to the infirmary and Bashir's like,
I like this.
I'm going to stop asking this question.
Just trying not to think about it. It sounds a bit racist the first time, but then Dax comes in and he's going, I'm trying not to think about it. It's kind of like,
But you know, but even even that has a character touch because obviously Bashir pined after Dax for a long time, didn't he?
Yeah, for sure. I really properly like this, the scene with Quark, because we had Quark in an episode the other day where he was wearing the comedy neck brace. That was Dramatis Personae and that was a shitty scene. And here he comes in and he's just been boning with Grilka and she's there. And it, like, that's really fun. These two have injured themselves.
And look, the way she says the line, she goes, you was the aggressor.
And this as well, because she's actually said this to him before in the scene, hasn't she? You are not a traditional Klingon. And he's not in the way that he was when he had the relationship with Kalar, when he slept with Kalar in series 3 of Star Trek The Next Generation.
She's stroking his hair.
We have to get married.
She's stroking his hair. That's lovely. Oh, come on.
We're just sort of playing with it.
What's very strange is their relationship isn't acknowledged again until Leahy is about sin, which is just a bit something terrible.
Awful.
Yeah.
Dreadful. Yeah. We should roll that.
Oh, no, please, let's not. We've done one terrible DSI episode recently. But yeah, I do like this as well. This is a very kind of adult conclusion straw. Let's just see what happens. Like, this has happened. Let's see what happens.
Yeah. Yeah.
We're about to get our comedy laughter ending from.
So this is the final scene, and this is the final line.
In this episode, full of great lines. Why did we end on this?
Not funny.
No,
that line isn't even funny. Like, there's no joke. Oh, so at least you've stopped thinking about Grilka. It's just like, well, fuck. What? Do a joke. Like, if you're gonna go out on a laugh, don't. One, don't do that. Two, make it a funny line if you decide to do it. But it's not even funny.
Even worse, like, you know. Didn't take me out to the holosuite as well. One more just can't do these comedy lines at the end because that wasn't funny either, was it?
No. And I didn't like that final scene. It was the one little kind of blemish on that superb episode.
Going back to what you said just there about once again, the Worf isn't a traditional Klingon.
Yeah.
Like, this is what happened on DS9, wasn't it? All the waifs and strays from every single planet in the Alpha Quadrant, they end up here.
Yeah.
You've got Quark, who's got a bit of a heart. Sisko, who's a family man, Garak, who's an exile, you know, Odo, who's one of the 100. Like, I like that about DS9. You've got all these sort of exceptions to the rule. And then that comes with massive like culture clash, doesn't it?
Ron Moore is the person to try and do some kind of arc on TNG with Worf's character by writing the Worf Klingon episode every year. And so he does make him interesting. And you were talking about family earlier, but you remember there's the little subplot with the Rashenkos coming on board the ship to meet Worf, which is really sweet, isn't it? And just reminds us that, you know, he is in this sort of weird space between being a Klingon and being human, which is, you know, the sort of dilemma that has existed in Star Trek since Spock. And I think it's kind of nice because he's so into being a Klingon and that explains it because it's something he's had to achieve and acquire later.
I think where DS9 makes Worf sing, and it takes them a little while, there's kind of like an adjustment period, series four, is they give him two characters, and they didn't do this in TNG. They give him Dax, so they give him a marriage, a relationship, and then they give him Martok. So they give him like a friend and someone from his own bit. And those scenes are just fantastic. So I think eventually Worf gets his best material on the show. And it's kind of here where we're tipping in the right direction.
Yeah, it's funny, isn't it? That the thing that Deep Space Nine can do that Star Trek The Next Generation just can't is give every regular some kind of relationships. Maybe Julian. I mean, Julian's parents are in it a couple of times, but no more than a couple of times. I guess he's got Garak, doesn't he? And a relationship with Miles. And, you know, Quark comes, you know, pre-populated with his brother and his son, you know. And that's really fun. And it's something that no other Star Trek has quite done. And I think it really works incredibly well.
Something else that really has been highlighted doing a series one DS9 episode followed by a series five DS9 episode is that in series one, they just didn't do hangout episodes. There always had to be high concept of the week. Whereas we've got to this stage in DS9 where the cast of characters are so strong that you can just hang out with them on the station
for
an episode and have a fucking blast.
Yeah. Well, I wanted to compare it kind of to the most recent Strange New Worlds episode at the time of recording. And again, it'll be a couple of weeks out of date, this observation. But the most recent episode that I've seen is called Spock a Mark. And that's their third variation of that title.
So cheeky with their titles.
It is a hangout episode as well. There is a negotiation with an alien race about joining the Federation, but basically they're at Starbase One, you know, around Earth, and they're doing shore leave and going down to the forests on the base and chilling and having drinks and chatting people up and stuff. And it is a hangout episode and everyone has a plot. And it's really fun, and I think that it may actually consciously reference this episode because it ends with Looking for Love in All the Wrong Places on the soundtrack over a kind of montage at the end of the episode.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. It's really strong. It's really funny. And it manages to be a hangout episode as episode, five? Mm. You know, we barely know the characters, but again, I think it's done a great job of drawing its characters well and outlining some of the relationships.
They are so well drawn. Even the pilot, you know, those characters were so beautifully drawn. You wanted to go off and have more adventures with them. DS9, it took me a little while, you know. I fell in love with them all.
Yeah, yeah. But the thing is that, like, I thought that was really fun and really enjoyable, but there is a sense in which it's not Star Trek enough.
Yeah,
not because it doesn't have space battles or space problems, but just that we don't see anything very interesting in it. It is all of us. There was that set. I guess the set with the high ceiling was a bit interesting. Yeah. Like, it is just people in standing sets kind of talking. And that's fun and that's, you know, cheap. And that means that we have to do something pretty interesting with the dialogue or why is anyone watching it? And so I think it works. It was enjoyable. But I do miss the spectacular a bit sometimes in 90s Trek.
I get what you're saying. And I think that's probably the biggest difference between you and I when it comes to Star Trek, is I can't just watch a cheapie and have an absolute blast with the characters. And I don't feel as if I'm missing anything because I'm having a good time. Yeah. So that's all I need.
Yeah. You know? I mean, I thought that was really fun. I think maybe House of Quark was a little bit more fun. Although, does House of Quark have that shitty Miles and Keiko subplot? Yeah. Is that in House of Quark? Jesus Christ, that's so bad.
They both got one, haven't they? They both got a terrible Miles subplot.
It's so funny. It really is just a straight remake of something that worked really well.
Yeah.
And, like, I think this works really well. And it obviously does some needed character arc stuff with Quark and Dax, which finally actually sort of happens.
And like the House of Quark, it's positioned, and I think DS9 does this with its comedy episodes, it's positioned really well. Three episodes into the season, we've done the biggie, we've done something serious, let's have some fun.
Yeah, let's have some fun. Yeah, yeah. And I certainly think it definitely succeeds at that. Right, it's time to choose our next episode. So I'm at untitledstartrekproject.com/randomizer, and it's my turn. Mm. And I'm supposed to come up with an interesting rationale for why we are choosing the thing and which series we're selecting from.
Something and bold and original.
Can't
please.
Think of one.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, let's.
How disappointing.
All of them. Let's just do all of them.
That's my favorite. Yeah.
I've got no idea. No idea. All right. So it could be anything. Let's see how we go. And I'm pressing the button. Oh.
What's that?
Oh. I have no idea.
Tell me. I'll tell you.
Well, I don't know. Okay. So your random Star Trek, the original series episode is Requiem for Methuselah, season 3, episode 19.
Oh, that's good, Charles. That's going to be shit with season 3.
Well, but it doesn't have to be because we have...
I mean, we did just do a original series, so...
I think we're going to choose something else, to be honest. It's some immortal guy, blah, blah, blah. So I've got no idea.
I'm seeing a robot that looks a little bit like Nomad when I'm doing a Google search.
Oh,
roll it again.
Right, well, nah. All right, roll again. Okay, Star Trek Discovery. Oh. Now, the difficulty here is, of course, that there's no way of knowing what it is. I think that we won't do this one because it's Series 3, Episode 12, and we've already done the end of Series 3 with
The Penultimate Episode
You, Part 2. It's Episode 12, so it's got to be the anti-penultimate episode, I think.
Oh, okay.
So that's kind of part one of the three-parter. I could be wrong, but it is episode 12. We did get quite close to the end of that, so I think we won't do that one.
Okay.
Let's try something else. Ooh, this might be the one. I think this is a very good Voyager episode.
Oh.
And undoubtedly, after we watch it again, I'm going to think it's a bit shit. So let's spoil my fun.
Not always. It's one of you don't always think that it's no, shit no, after you watch it again.
So this is Star Trek Voyager Season 5, Episode 10, Counterpoint.
Oh, my
which
God.
Is, yeah,
this
yeah.
is Kate Mulgrew's favorite episode of Voyager.
I'm not surprised. It's got a great guest actor. And so it's her acting against a great guest actor, which is always an interesting kind of thing for Star Trek to do.
Do you remember the opening when they're pumping classical music and then these Nazis are storming through Voyager? Oh, man, it's terrific. Yeah. Oh, let's do that
one. Yeah, it's pretty good. Yeah, let's do it. Absolutely. That's going to be really fun.
Brilliant.
A really proper, solidly good Voyager episode I don't think we've ever done.
I would say no. Well, Killing Game maybe if you really like that, but no.
I think that was pretty fun.
I'd go as far to say this is a Voyager classic.
Yeah. All right. Cool. We'll do it.
See you then.
listening to Untitled Star Trek Project with Joe Ford and Nathan Bottomley. We're online at UntitledStarTrekProject.com, where you can find links to our Twitter, Facebook, and YouTube channel. Our podcast artwork is by Kayla Cicerin, and the theme was composed by Cameron Lamb. This episode was recorded on the 7th of June 2022 and released on the 17th of June. We'll see you next time for Star Trek Voyager Counterpoint. You know, there is an exterior establishing shot of the station.
What?
That's really all we get. That's all we get. Nothing else. And someone paid for those LEDs on Worf's neck thing.
Yeah, I think, man, I should have made that point as well. I sometimes think it can go the other way, that there's too much spectacle when there isn't enough character. You know, and I certainly felt that with some early Discovery. You know, there was just too much plot and spectacle and not enough interesting people.
Not enough standing around cheaply in rooms.
You're a Doctor Who fan. Shut up.
Yeah, that's right. But fuck, that Strange New Worlds episode, there's just a scene with like Bob, April, Chris Pike, and these two aliens of the week in a conference room. You know, like it's a scene that would just happen, like, you know, in the most boring room on Voyager. Like they'd put it in the observation lounge or whatever the hell. But here they're having it on the station. And so you just see them in a conference room. It's dark and the background is just like a massive window looking out onto one of those forested domes.
Oh, wow.
Starbase One. And so it's a perfectly standard Star Trek scene, but it just looks amazingly
great. The trouble
is
they couldn't do that, could they? I mean,
no, they just couldn't do it. They couldn't afford it. That's the thing. And that's why we get these cheap things. It's not that, you know, there's the meretricious spectacle of beautiful, interesting space shots, but real proper TV just involves people standing talking in rooms.
There must be some 90s trailer we're going to watch where you'll be like, wow, this is visually very interesting.
Yeah, it's funny, isn't it? And it before doing this podcast, I would never have said this whole era of Star Trek was boring
or cheap. But it felt so expensive at the time.
I loved it. And it did. It felt amazingly expensive at the time. Wow, you can take your old TOS with all its interesting incidental music
and even those studio sets in season one of Next Generation, we were like, whoa, what an alien planet.
Ooh.
The planet of Armus. Oh my God. Okay.
Now it's my turn, isn't it? And I haven't even thought about what we're doing.
It's your turn. No, I better relinquish the bedroom because it's 10:15. We don't want to get to bed.
Yeah, God, I better get out of here. I'm going to be at school in an hour.
I knew that was going to be fun, that one. I knew it.
Forgot about
that. I did laugh a lot there.
Yeah, it is fun. I think that was really good.
Oh, imagine when we get like, man, Bashir or something like that. Oh, come on. Oh, bada bing, bada bang.
All right, it's time to choose our next episode.